Welcome to this fifth podcast in a series about investing in emerging markets into the new decade. It's fair to say that the emerging market universe of today looks very different from that of the 1990s. And indeed, the various economies that make up emerging markets have come a long way, and their rapid development has been nothing short of astounding. In previous episodes of this series, we looked at the outlook and trends, growing wealth, digitalization, and healthcare in emerging markets. Today, we'll focus on what it means to invest in emerging Asia. And we'll do so with Julie Dixon, Investment Director at Capital Group. Welcome, Julie. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's really great to be here.
Wonderful. Well, Julie, in this series, we've been talking about the 10 trends for the future of investing in emerging markets. Could you perhaps give us some examples of key trends that are paving the way for long-term growth in Asia?
Sure. I mean, there are so many different things going on in emerging Asia today. On the one hand, you have an aging population in China. And on the other hand, you have a very young and entrepreneurial population in India. And in between that, you have a number of different developments happening that are driving demand for products, for services, anywhere from financial services to healthcare to luxury goods to travel. It's actually really quite a dynamic and really exciting region to be investing in today.
Wow. The region, indeed, like you said, has a quite diverse and unique demographic profiles. How are demographics influencing the growth in emerging markets?
Well, yeah, so if we dig a little bit deeper, I'll start first with, for example, the healthcare services. And I'll start with China. You know, China, with its aging population, is certainly starting to shift into a demographic where you want greater healthcare services for, let's say, diabetes, for heart disease, for cancer, for any number of diseases that tend to be life diseases growing rapidly. You also have this great deal of investment and support by the government to really develop the healthcare services beyond just generic sort of doctor and hospital services, going into biotech, going into research and development. So it's a very exciting part of the market for us in that area. But on the other side of that, for example, what I talked about in India is in terms of young and entrepreneurial population, what you're seeing there is a really massive growth in financial services, where the number of people growing into the middle class is exploding the demand for financial services, ranging from basic banking to online payment platforms or in e-commerce, even fintech. And so just some areas worth looking into.
Right. I'd like to talk with you, Julie, about a specific recent partnership that was launched in the region. So in November 2020, 15 countries in the Asia-Pacific region signed the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, the RCEP agreement. Could you tell us which are the benefits of this trade agreement and which countries have joined it?
So one of the key things about this agreement is the ability, and this is something that's really symptomatic of actually emerging markets as a whole and how they're growing and diversifying, and that is that they're making regional pacts now and regional trade deals that allow them to really benefit from their own growth. It's important to remember that the emerging markets, and in particular Asia, are growing really fast. And so their ability to actually do trade deals with each other, to allow each other to benefit from more simplified solutions in terms of import and export and services, even travel, for example, is an area that we believe is going to benefit greatly. So whether it's in Indonesia or China or India or Taiwan or Hong Kong, there are so many different places now, and travel is one of those areas where we're going to see a big benefit, in that kind of agreement and partnership.
Right. Now, one of the countries joining is China. Why is China well positioned for future growth in both domestic as well as the global arena?
Well, again, China is one of those countries that continues to grow rapidly, even though we know that the growth itself is slowing down, it is still growing. And there are a number of policies domestically, especially related to the Common Prosperity Agenda, for example, that is really there to drive a larger number of people coming into the middle class, greater amount of spending, a huge a jump, we believe, is going to be in domestic travel in particular, as well as the ability for China to really be a global player, whether it's in healthcare, whether it's in electric vehicle batteries, whether it's in renewable energy. These are all areas where China is expanding rapidly in technology everywhere. So its ability to have both a domestic growth as well as both a regional and a global presence can only benefit them.
And now we tend to focus on China. It's one of those countries that pops up always when we think of the emerging markets. But after a slowdown in 2019 and a harsh lockdown in 2020, India may regain its place among the fastest growing emerging markets and could be poised for double-digit growth. What is driving this growth in India, Julie?
Well, so one of the things about India that's been really interesting is it has both challenges and opportunities. The opportunities still lie very much in its very young population and a very entrepreneurial population. So a number of small businesses are growing rapidly. The access to financing is getting better. In fact, one of the things about India is that it's actually, there's a World Bank that issues a ease of doing business ranking every single year. And it went from the 140s to the 60s in terms of moving up in the ranks.
Wow.
And so it's unlocking the ability for investors and also just companies to actually set up businesses in India, which is great. But the challenges still remain in India about its infrastructure as well as cheap labor costs that are still being cheaper, for example, in China than they are in India. So they're a little bit behind India in some of the India is still a little bit behind China in some of its developments. But we still believe that there's still a great deal of growth. And one of the areas, as I mentioned before, that is really exciting is absolutely the development of financial services. We see this both in India as well as in Indonesia, for example, where a vast, access to financial services, the greater deal of financial integration by the Indian population is a major policy agenda by the current government. The number of people who are going to be earning about $30,000 a year, for example, in income, is set to double over the next decade, which is creating a huge driver in growth for services, for financial services. And again, some of the things that we've already seen in China, we expect will eventually also come to India. So areas in healthcare again, consumer spending, financial services, healthcare are all areas that we think are going to expand over the next 10 to 20 years.
Right. That was actually my next question. Which key sector should we keep an eye on? But I think you answer it already. So clearly financial industry, but also healthcare. What else did you say?
It will be financial services and even consumer areas. Well, again, as household formations continue to accelerate, there's no question that there will be some demand there.
Right. Now, to stay on this positive path of growth, India will need to implement some structural reforms. What can you tell us about these reforms, Julie?
Sure. Now, that's an area that continues to be an area of focus for a number of investors, in particular what's happening with India. And one of the areas that has got to be, again, the ability the country to develop its infrastructure, the macro and micro reforms, the ability for companies to do business more easily, to cut the red tape is absolutely an area of focus. The ability to resolve insolvencies more quickly. On average, it takes 4 years. Now it's being cut down to 12 months. These are all areas that are going to promote development, greater confidence in terms of doing business, greater confidence in terms of investors wanting to invest locally in India. So these are the reforms that we believe are going to benefit a number of sectors in India as a result.
So talking about China, talking about India and the topics that we discussed today, what would you say is key to successfully invest in emerging markets? How can investors benefit best from this region?
Again, it all comes down to doing your homework. The index, if you start with the index in emerging markets, and even in India, it's very heavily skewed towards, for example, IT and financial services, and less representative of some of the consumer and some of the high tech and even the healthcare areas that are currently benefiting from the kind of growth opportunities that we're seeing in the region. So it's really a question of, and there's also a great deal of state-owned enterprises that remain a very large part of the market and the index investment opportunity set. So in our view, to avoid some of the pitfalls, it's really important to look at companies, do your homework, really dig deep into how they're expanding, how they're able to sustain their growth, the quality of the management, the quality of the accountancy and the transparency, and really look at these opportunities one company at a time in order to really take advantage and not worry so much about, well, what's their weight in the index? Because in some cases, having three or four times the actual index weight makes a lot of sense if that's where the growth is.
Now, of course, we are still in the pandemic. It's slow. We're slowly getting through it, but it's still here. Do you think that following the pandemic, investors can expect more volatility in the years ahead?
It's really hard to say what the volatility is going to be like, because part of that is market driven, part of that is sentiment driven, and sometimes bad news can create a lot more volatility than is probably warranted in the marketplace. And so, of course, investing in higher growth could also be higher risky areas in the market. You have to maintain a long term view and ride that out. And I think we're at a turning point now in Asia, and it's indeed emerging markets, and that valuations are the lowest they've been in quite a long time, given the level of earnings growth we can expect to receive over the next few years. It's also important to remember that there are some industries that are reopening for the first time, such as the travel industry, for example, in Asia, where there's an enormous amount of pent-up demand. And this will also drive growth quite significantly. And I believe with less volatility, unless, of course, there are some unexpected negative surprises related to COVID or lockdowns or restrictions. But the sense is that we seem to be emerging out of this cycle from the pandemic and moving more and more towards a greater opening of borders and a greater access to travel. So there's no doubt that, if you keep a long-term view, there's some great opportunities out there to be had.
Right. And now one thing we did not touch upon yet is, so we spoke about emerging markets, but then there's also many frontier markets. They did not experience a recession in 2020, but do you think that they offer an additional investment opportunity?
Yes. And the one thing I really like about frontier markets is that they tend to move very differently from everyone else. They're less correlated with the global economy. Emerging markets are more correlated with the growth of the rest of the world than frontier markets are. They tend to be, the thing about frontier markets, however, that they tend to be a little bit underdeveloped, at least on the equity side, in terms of both the number of companies available to invest in, their valuations, their size, their liquidity, etc. And so investments in frontier markets really tend to be much more company specific rather than market specific. And there's a number of examples in terms of what we can invest in frontier markets, whether it's in Kazakhstan and some of the banks there that are providing really interesting services, both on the fintech and the traditional banking side of the equation, or places like Uruguay, where you have a company like dLocal that's offering business-to-business payments services to a number of the bigger players around the world. And so there's some very exciting opportunities that we can invest in those markets. But it has to be one company at a time.
Right, one company at a time. Thank you so much, Julie, for taking the time to talk with me about emerging markets in Asia and how to invest in it. It was a pleasure having you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You listened to a podcast on investing in emerging markets into the new decade. And I would like to thank today's guest, Julie Dixon, Investment Director at Capital Group, for her time and her insights. This podcast is offered to you by Capital Group. If you'd like to learn more about investing in emerging markets, please visit the Capital Group website, capitalgroup.com/NL. For more podcasts, please visit the Fonds News website, fondsnews.nl/podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been recorded in November 2021 and the information presented is for illustrative purposes only. While Capital Group uses reasonable efforts to obtain information from third-party sources which it believes to be reliable, Capital Group makes no representation or warranty as to the accuracy, reliability, or completeness of the information. Any opinion, estimate, or forecast is subject to change. This communication is of a general nature and not intended to provide investment advice or to be a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Statements attributed to an individual represent the opinions of that individual and may not necessarily reflect the view of Capital Group or its affiliates. Emerging markets are volatile and may suffer from liquidity problems.